with the 21st pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Green Bay Packers select Taha Clinton-Dix.
It's time for the Packers War Room Podcast.
Made me a believer into really thinking that the Packers really could run the table. And that was when I said right away, they're winning the NFC North.
The bomb to Jordy Nelson was just a moment that I'll never forget. For him to be able to get behind the corner and really just catch the prayer, essentially, was just quintessential Packers 2016.
Like I said, for this team to win two playoff games was just astounding with how beat up they were and the state of their defense, really.
And now, alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer, here's your host of the Packers War Room Podcast, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Packers War Room Offseason Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Uglum. I'm a writer at CheeseheadTV.com and PackersTalk.com, and joining me, as always, is Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how are you this evening?
Talk a little defensive line. Well, excited is one term for it. You'll find out very quickly why none of us really are. But a little Packers offseason news. It's the last week before free agency opens, and it's the week of the combine. So the offseason's getting ready to ramp up here a little bit. It's March. I think, Ross, you said this is the 8 weeks of greatness as far as sports go, without the NFL at least. So it's a lot of good stuff starting up.
Certainly, and joining us as well is the resident draft expert at Cheesehead TV, and helps us out here on the Packers Talk Podcast Network, Cody Bauer. Cody, how's it hanging tonight?
Things are going good, man. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk a little football. Combine week, good time to be an NFL draft fan, that's for sure.
It certainly is, and you know, this, you talk about Combine week, and they've had a couple of interviews of note, and one was actually on Wilde and Tausch. That was TJ Lang himself. It sounds like the Packers have at least opened discussions with Lang, and then McCarthy flat out said that he's operating as though TJ Lang is coming back on the team. So with these two interviews kind of coinciding with each other in the last 4 or 5 day span, do you feel better than you did a week ago about the TJ Lang situation, Cody?
Not really. I don't know if I can confidently say I feel better. I'd feel better if, you know, put ink to paper, I'd feel better about it. I think right now it's just talks. It's nice that they have open dialogue with each other. McCarthy going to bat for his players' vision is nothing new. It's getting with excitement and optimistic that he's going to be signed. It ultimately comes down to Ball and Thompson and working out a deal that's going to be best for both the Packers and him. And, you know, until that deal is actually inked, I don't foresee a reason to really believe, you know, to be overly excited. You see some other guys out there, you know, the offensive guard for the Chiefs, Laurent, David Rene, Tari, signs a 5-year, $40 million deal. I mean, that kind of sets the market for Lang. Hometown discount, you know, you'd love to see what happened, but, you know, Lang knows what he's worth. His agent tells him what he can get on the open market. I think he's going to probably explore some options. He knows some other teams have to say he's going to get some over $8 million a year. And if the Packers don't want to come up to that, then I think they're going to, you know, explore the free agency. So I'm not overly excited just on some rumors and hearsay about some discussions. There's no reason to be excited yet.
I think I disagree a little bit. I just can't remember the last time the head coach came out and said, you know, we think this guy's going to be back, and then he wasn't. We'll talk about Eddie Lacy in a minute as well, but, you know, more often than not, a guy that's leaving or a guy that's not going to be brought back, Michael say something along the lines of, well, that's Ted's department, or he'll kind of defer to Russ Ball or do something along those lines. But I just think that this makes me feel like Lang is part of the plan moving forward, and will likely come back into the fold and possibly even finish out his career in Green Bay. Jacob, what do you think about the Lang situation?
It's kind of funny to watch on Twitter because, you know, you kind of watch the banter back and forth. And TJ Lang, he knows how to play this game, and he knows, like, the game that's being played. Mike McCarthy pointed out that you know, Lang had a surgery and he said he won't do anything until training camp. And I think that was put out there. I mean, I don't think that wasn't put out there on purpose, so to speak. And TJ Lang basically said, well, I did that last year too. I didn't do anything until training camp last year and I had a Pro Bowl season. And Lang's been very vocal on Twitter about how, you know, I'm not old and I played really well last year. And, you know, I see all these guys making money and I'm not stupid and I know what I'm worth and all these sorts of things. So it's entertaining, if nothing else. TJ Lang's a very entertaining Twitter follow regardless. So I expect nothing less as far as his impending free agency here. Not surprised to hear he's going to test the free agent market. He said as much, and that's smart. See what he's worth on the open market. I did read somewhere that it's likely that he also will let the Packers have an opportunity to match the best free agent deal that he gets. But I don't know that I would say that I feel better about the situation. I do feel better from the standpoint of they've had some dialogue, which means he's part of the plan. But the question is now, I also see the dollar signs going up in terms of how business is being operated. I mean, you see a lot of players getting a lot of money at that position. And reality is, Ted Thompson's still the general manager of the Green Bay Packers, and Ted Thompson still is someone that doesn't value the guard position. Now, I also do wonder if Ted Thompson is aware that there isn't somebody that can step in and play right away at the right guard spot like he had with Lane Taylor last year, which may make him value Lang a little bit more than he would, say, Josh Sitton at this time a year ago. Well, maybe not right at this time, but the way he did Josh Sitton last year at the end of training camp. So I feel a little bit better, but I'm still not 100% sold. If you were asking me odds, I'd put it right at the flip of a coin. I won't be surprised if TJ Lang is a Denver Bronco or a Minnesota Viking, which were two teams that were mentioned today as quote-unquote front-runners, which I'm not sure how that's not tampering if those are teams that are being mentioned as front-runner. But I feel a little bit better from the standpoint of, yes, they have had dialogue, and Ted Thompson said today that he wouldn't be surprised if there are deals done by the deadline. Now, whether that means Nick Perry or Micah Hyde or Jared Cook or TJ Lang remains to be seen. But it's March 1st as we record this. The deadline for a free agency to open is a week from tomorrow. We'll see who gets done between now and then as far as that artificial deadline. But I wouldn't be surprised if any deals are done. I'm just not sure if it's Lang, and I don't know how much better I feel about that.
All right, that's fair. One thing, though, I will say the same type of deal with Eddie Lacy. It just really seems like all signs point to Lacy being back. Did anybody disagree, Cody?
No, I think that's probably a fair statement. I predict that he'll be back. Everybody in the organization seems to be on board with him. We hear reports of keeping tabs on him. His foot should be ready to go by OTAs and all that. I can't foresee a reason why he wouldn't be back. I can't foresee a reason why the Packers wouldn't want to bring him back. I would love to bring him back personally on like a one-year prove-it kind of deal. Stay healthy, stay in shape. I mean, he looked good at the beginning of last year. I don't know why anyone would think that the Packers wouldn't be interested in bringing him back for another year or two.
Jacob, you think he's as good as back?
I would think so. If they're very vocal about having him back, so long as the money doesn't get funny with him and anything to stop this Adrian Peterson to Green Bay madness. But Mike McCarthy said that, you know, you mentioned if Mike McCarthy mentions he wants him back, the Packers need a running back. Eddie Lacy, I imagine, is not going to be very expensive. I imagine he's as good as back. You know, Lacy still has a lot to contribute. I know there's discussion about his weight issues. Some of that was self-induced by Lacy. Some of that was induced by the head coach publicly calling him out. But the reality was, I don't really care if Eddie Lacy weighs 300 pounds if he's going to average 5 yards a carry like he did early in the season. Eddie Lacy played with the ankle injury, with a lesser version of that ankle injury that he ended up suffering in that Dallas game. And he ran very well against the Cowboys defense last year before re-aggravating that injury. He's still a good running back. And if he's healthy and you can get him for 1 year, $3 million, something of that sort, I think that's the best free agent running back on the market. And that's with guys with those names like Jamal Charles and Adrian Peterson and Latavius Murray and all these guys that seem to be linked to Green Bay, which I think has little to no merit. And I don't know if you guys want to discuss that further or not. I don't think those guys have any merit in terms of bringing him to Green Bay, because I think Eddie Lacy's going to be back. I think McCarthy said it as much. I think the Packers want to bring him back to see if he can be, because you guys saw when the last time Eddie Lacy was fully healthy and fully committed, the Packers were the best offense in football, and Eddie Lacy was one of the better running backs in football. They were really a good, balanced football team. They had the best passing attack in football, and they were able to run that shot play largely due, or maybe not largely due, but really due to the fact of the threat that Lacy brought them out of that backfield, because teams had to respect his ability to gash them in the ground game. And a 1-2 punch of Lacy Montgomery, if Lacy's fully healthy and Montgomery progresses as a running back, that's a scary thought for some defenses to play against next year.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that he'll be back, but we talked offensive line last time we got together on this show. Interior offensive line, there's some interesting prospects, certainly, but the offensive tackles were pretty rough. Not a position that Green Bay needs, really, because of the presence of Jason Spriggs, because of the presence of Kyle Murphy. But that was a pretty awful position group. This might be as bad. I was talking to someone, and I think if you go back and look, I might have had Kenny Clark ninth in last year's defensive line class. And just based on film, I would select him second in this year's class. I mean, that's where we're at right now in this defensive line class. Guys, is defensive line or offensive tackle the worst position in this draft class? Go ahead, Jacob.
Wow. I'm going to go with offensive tackle just because I know defensive line, there's one elite prospect, and that's Jonathan Allen. Offensive tackle, I know last week we talked about Ryan Ramczyk. There's no argument that Ryan Ramczyk should be taken in the top 10. Jonathan Allen, I'm very sure, will be taken within the first
five.
Yeah. Potentially as high as number 3 to Chicago. Ryan Ramczyk's not getting picked that high. Cam Robinson's not probably getting picked that high. And there's Mike Mayock has Cam Robinson slated as a guard. So that kind of tells you some of the holes in his game as well. So I think offensive tackle is a really poor position in this class, and it really makes me thankful that David Bakhtiari, Brian Bulaga, and Jason Spriggs all wear green and gold, because the Packers now, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but that the Packers have 3, in my opinion at least, starting caliber offensive tackles, because now they don't really have to worry about picking an offensive tackle in this year's class. But yeah, I mean, defensive line, not a good class. Especially, I mean, last year we're talking about that might have been the best position. You're talking about Kenny Clark. You had him ranked 9th, and that's a player who you kind of showed some of the clips you had yesterday. And it's a player I'm excited for next year. He's a guy to take a leap. He's like 16 years old or something like that when he entered the league. A player that could really take a leap next year. And he was, I don't know off the top of my head, but not the first guy selected. There were quite a few defensive linemen selected ahead of him, and quite a few defensive linemen ranked above him. There were a lot of defensive linemen in last year's class that were quality. Dean Lowry's a guy, Cody, you loved him last year, and the Packers were able to get him with a compensatory pick in the 4th round, and you really like his potential to grow as a defensive lineman for this D-line rotation in the future. Packers got him in the 4th round. I don't know if there are guys like that in this year's class, but the offensive tackle class, there's no elite prospect whatsoever. Jonathan Allen at least exists as a saving grace for this year's defensive line. So offensive tackle, that's the worst position in this year's class. I don't think there's a lot of question on that.
Cody, your thoughts?
I'll play devil's advocate here, and I'll go D-line is a little bit weaker, interior defensive line, a little bit weaker than offensive tackle. And it's really just kind of splitting hairs. There's just I agree with you. Jonathan Allen is, you know, the A++ prospect out of the whole group. Between Ramczyk, Robinson, Bowles, I think you have an upper echelon tier that's probably a little bit better than upper echelon tier of interior defensive linemen. And for the sake of this, I think we are all kind of in agreement that Malik McDowell will probably be more likely an edge, so I won't include him. So you really only have Allen in the top tier, whereas this, you potentially have three first-rounders. And then I kind of like some of the developmental offensive tackles. Nobody's going to really jump out at you, but I think in a couple of years you might see some of these guys make an impact. Defensive line, I mean, they're just a bunch of jags and just another guy is what that stands for. You know, along the middle of the draft, towards the end of the draft, a couple guys who do one thing well and do a bunch of other things just average or not so great. It's really a crapshoot on what you want to call, you know, better or worse comparatively. They're both just pretty weak this year. So I guess for the sake of the argument, I'll say that D-line is probably a little bit worse.
Yeah, I disagree with you on McDowell. I think I'm going to rank him as a defensive lineman. I think that's where he would start in Green Bay. He might get the Dayton Jones treatment. That's what we were sort of referring to. But I really think he's going to end up on the defensive line on a 3-4 team eventually. And I just rank him as a DI, as do most. Most rankers right now have him playing on the interior despite his tall, long frame. I think it's defensive lineman. I mean, I have this group for the Cheesehead TV draft guide, and it's not fun. I mean, I don't know what to think, really, or how to do this. I kind of want to just write Jonathan Allen and a bunch of guys. I mean, it really is. I don't see disruption. That's what bugs me about this whole class, is I don't see any disruption, and it really does bother me. You know, guys 2 through 20 on this whole list, I need to see you do more than just hold your own in the run game to take you before like round 5. Cause beyond then, I just don't care. I mean, that's not what this league is about. You have to be able to cause havoc at the line of scrimmage. And if you're not, you're just a guy. And if you're just a guy, well, I'll get one of you in the 5th or 6th round. So that's where I'm at with this class. I'm touring through film, you know, desperately trying to find a diamond in the rough, try to find somebody that I love. That isn't Allen from Alabama, but it's not going super well at this time. So I understand Jacob's points, but maybe I'm just too close to the D-line situation. It's repug. I can't deal with it and be happy about it, because it's a dark place, this class. Speaking of which, I saw this theory kind of perpetuated a little bit by Packers Twitter, and boy, would it be something. Could you guys imagine if Ted Thompson saw this coming, and that's why he's taken two defensive linemen last year and two offensive tackles? Does he have the foresight to see weaknesses and classes and to load up like that, Cody?
I mean, I'd like to think that maybe he had a little foresight and projecting some of this, you know, the lesser of the classes, but maybe I'm just thinking too much of him. You know, there's a lot of smart people paid a lot of money to kind of look into this thing, Ted Thompson being one of them, but I mean, his tree is, you know, internally right now is made up of a lot of good guys who are eventually going to go on at BGM. So, you know, I don't know. It's without being in there, it's hard to say, but I would love to think that he had that kind of, you know, crystal ball in front of them to realize, you know, okay, well, where are my underclassmen tackles for next year? Who's going to be seniors? Kind of projecting it out. I mean, we were talking off air. I mean, Jason Spriggs this year might be offensive tackle one, if not one, probably offensive tackle two. And that's a guy you've gotten traded up for in the second round, but you got him in the second round, and now you're sitting pretty with three, you know, starting caliber offensive tackles. And, you know, defensive line, you know, we mentioned the Clark thing already, 9th to this year being easily top 5, probably top 2. You know, I think that there's certainly something to be said about Thompson's ability and his staff's ability to look ahead a little bit and figure out where the weaknesses are going to be in the future draft classes. And and have to figure out how to address it now. I mean, you know, the Spriggs and Clark thing are just, think about that for a minute. There's teams right now that would be thirsty to get Jason Spriggs. I mean, he could go as high as Jacksonville number three, potentially, if, you know, if he was in this year's draft class. That's how, you know, desperate teams are going to be for offensive tackle, or the Jets at six need one, you know, and to get him in the second round a year before, you know, it's really cool just to even think, if, even if it's not true, to think that he had that kind of, you know, ability to see ahead and kind of figure out who's going to be draft eligible and then who's going to be player, that kind of, you know, just it would be spectacular to think that he has that ability.
Jacob, what do you feel like this is a possibility? I mean, does Ted Thompson have enough time on his hands to scout a full draft class ahead?
I mean, it probably helped that last year the Packers' needs were so dire, as far as David Bakhtiari was a pending free agent coming into the year, so he needed a tackle. So he had Jason Spriggs, so he needed that. That helped. And you needed defensive linemen, so that certainly helped. But, I mean, Ted Thompson's a really smart guy. Elliot Wolf and Brian Gutekunst are really smart guys. I'm sure that they're looking ahead and saying, hey, these guys are guys that would be in the top, yeah, 2 to 5-ish of next year's draft class. Maybe you grab these guys this year, because next year the guys that are coming out in these classes aren't going to be there. And if you don't fill this need now, you're not going to be able to fill it in next year's draft class. And the way that we build this team is such, I mean, the Packers aren't blind. The guys in that front office, they know that, you know, if the Packers need to fill a need, it's going to be pretty much through the draft. Outside of Jared Cook last year, that's the only free agent they signed. So they're not filling a need by signing a free agent, more likely than not. So, I mean, I don't think it's much of a conspiracy theory to think that, I mean, there's a lot of time on these guys' hands. That's kind of what they're paid to do. I don't think that it's so much ridiculous to think, like, they're looking ahead and seeing that, okay, so Jonathan Allen is the best defensive lineman prospect, and okay, we're probably not going to get him because we anticipate being good. Scout him, because if something really bad happens and we can get him, that's great. But chances are we're probably not going to be able to get him. But get your guys now, and so next year you don't really have to focus so much per se on the defensive line. I don't think that's ridiculous to think at all, and I would like to think that, yeah, there's some foresight to say. It's the same kind of foresight of when he drafted Aaron Rodgers, and that was a different situation, and it took a lot of guts and some foresight to say Brett Favre is in his mid-30s, and this is a quarterback who fell in our lap. This is a guy we can develop in the first round. He was touted as a potential number one overall pick, and this is the foresight of a guy who he can be our potential franchise starting quarterback, and lo and behold, he's the greatest quarterback in the history of the Green Bay Packers. So a little different, but at the same time, that's the kind of foresight it takes to be a general manager. Yeah, I think that Ted Thompson has the foresight to think ahead 1 year, if he had the foresight to take Aaron Rodgers and think ahead 3 full years in that scenario.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I think that there's something to that. You know, I think we all kind of agree that he might not be as aggressive as we want in free agency, but from a team-building perspective, from a scouting perspective, he really is playing chess while a lot of other folks are playing checkers. I think he was one really to identify early on, you know, that slot players were starters too. Now everybody else is kind of working in that, but he was always drafting slot corners and slot receivers and, you know, making sure that 11 personnel was covered on offense and defense. And I think there are a lot of different things that Ted Thompson, even being an old school, you know, white-haired linebacker from the Tennessee Titans, or I guess what at that time would have been the Houston Oilers, it just, it's really impressive how brilliant a guy like Thompson is. And with that said, let's dive into this terrible class of defensive linemen. Jacob, what round, if any, are you looking for a defensive lineman?
Well, I've mentioned on every show, offensive and defensive linemen. Ted's taken one almost every year since he's been here, so you can imagine that'll be the case. But I'm not really looking with the way the Packers have their defensive line set up right now. You know, Kenny Clark's going to be around. Mike Daniels is a bona fide stud, one of the best players at his position in the league. Dean Lowry and Kenny Clark are still here. Christian Ringo, I think, is an interesting player that they could use a little bit more from next year. The release of Mike Pennell adds the need maybe for a rotational defensive lineman. So I guess you're looking on day three, so fifth round or later, especially with the way that this class is set up. You know, you mentioned this class just isn't very strong. If this was a strong class, then if the value presented itself at 29th overall and you had a guy like, you know, last year when the Packers were on the clock and a guy like Robert and Kim DJ was sitting there, that was a guy that if they had taken him, that would have been fine. And if the way that this class is set up, if they had a guy like that, that would have been fine. But a guy like that just isn't going to be available when the Packers are on the clock. And a guy like, you know, I mentioned Jonathan Allen is the only defensive lineman that I'm going to be head over heels in love with when the Packers are on the clock in the first round. And that's really the only guy that I think I'm really nuts about as far as defensive line prospects go. Now, there's some guys that I think have some traits, and we'll talk more about those as this progresses. But, yeah, day three, round five or later, one, because I don't think the need for a defensive lineman is that great. If you get some organic growth from guys like Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry, and two, there's just not a lot of guys there. If you can get just some growth from those guys and some high-quality play from Mike Daniels that you usually get, a resurgence a little bit from LaTroy Guyon. The Packers only played two defensive linemen almost exclusively to the point where, and they kick a lot of, you know, your outside guys. If Dayton Jones is back, he'll play a little defensive line in some pass rushing situations and stuff as well. So the need is just not there. If we were ranking team needs, defensive line after quarterback, kicker, punter, etc., it's just really not there. And I know I just said, like, if I had a pipe dream free agent, Calais Campbell would be my guy. Now, if you can get a guy like that, obviously you want to add a guy like that. But the need just isn't there, especially in a class that's not very good. So, yeah, round five through seven-ish is where I'm looking for a guy. And that's where you're looking for a project with really good measurables that maybe just isn't fundamentally sound and you're just trying to add some strength or some technique, something of that sort. But it's not going to be a finished product, and it might be a guy that you get really frustrated with for a little while and you hope he's a late bloomer.
Yeah, I think I am with you on that. I don't like any of these guys at the top of the draft, so if you're going to take one, think of a developmental one down lower, and then, you know, potentially even take one. Like, I would like to take one with the body type of a Calais Campbell. Take a 6'6", take a 6'5", take somebody with some length that you can hang weight on and try and develop. Because other than that, you know, there are no 6'2", 300-pound studs in this class. It's nothing that I'm super excited about. If I'm looking for a defensive lineman this year, I'm looking down the line. Cody, how about you?
I'm firmly day three with Ray with you guys. You mentioned, you know, a lot of the reasons they're playing two down linemen most of the time and kicking in our outside linebackers even in those kinds of situations just doesn't create a huge need. I think you're going to see some big steps from Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry. You know, with Mike Daniels already there, you have a good young core. Adding a guy in the late rounds to potentially, you know, work into a rotation as a young guy or even, you know, put on the practice squad, it's never a bad idea to get big bodies, especially ones who are athletic and have shown flashes throughout their career of being a good playmaker, or maybe just need some technique work or something along those lines. I never hate the idea of drafting a defensive lineman, but in this particular draft, with our particular needs in Green Bay, I think, you know, day three is where you start to look for, and nothing before then would really piqued my interest. And I guess in round one, we mentioned Jonathan Allen a million times. He's going top five. Malik McDowell, I mentioned that he'd probably be an edge, but if we're calling him an interior D lineman early in his career, we'll see what he weighs in at the combine and kind of what his testing is. But, you know, if he were there at 29, he could be enticing enough to maybe pull the trigger. But again, if, you know, barring those two for whatever reason, and, you know, barring those two, I'm just looking strictly day three.
All right. So, Cody, who are the popular guys in round five or six? Who's your favorite player in that group?
I particularly like Nazir Jones from North Carolina. He's a player who's got the typical five-tech prototype body, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 295 pounds, similar to Dean Lowry, except I think he's going to be a little bit longer. You know, Dean Lowry's, that was, he had short arms, but I don't know if he'll test quite as good as Lowry as an athlete, but he's a guy who just seems to always be around the ball. I mean, he had 70 tackles as an interior defensive lineman, and that's just quite a bit when you think about plays that go away from you or whatever. When watching live, he jumped out on me right away as a guy who will chase down plays, doesn't give up on them, shows good hustle. I like his length. I think he can disengage from blockers at the line of scrimmage. He's not a real great pass rusher. He doesn't have that explosiveness that, you know, a lot of, you know, a three-tech would, but that's not exactly his role. You know, I think he could eat up some blockers and be stout against double teams. He's one of my favorite guys in that round, you know, four to five, potentially even six round, depending on how the draft shapes up. But Nazir Jones is one of the guys that I really like, and I think he could be a good fit as a rotational guy right away. You know, Mike Pennell replacement, if you would.
Jacob, who are the guys that you're kind of looking at? Which is your favorite late-round defensive line prospect?
Cody just mentioned one with Nazir Jones. Another guy I like is Jaron Jones out of Notre Dame. He's a 6'5 guy. He's 315. Again, not really a pass rusher, which is kind of against what I'm going for because I'm not big on two-down defensive linemen. He's not really a pass rusher, but he did have 11 tackles for loss last year. Batted three balls down. So I'm interested to see his arm length, to see what that measures out as. But he's 6'5", so he's tall, or at least he was listed at 6'5". It'll be interesting to see what he measures out at the combine. He's 315 pounds, so that tells you he's probably a little bit more of a run stuffer. Two sacks. Notre Dame, you've kind of seen some issues, I guess you could say, out of their defensive linemen recently with guys like Louis Nix coming out and having those weight issues and such. But, again, you're looking at more of a rotational defensive lineman and a Mike Pennell type replacement. This is a guy who's probably going to come in, eat up blockers, and probably become a rotational type nose tackle. And one guy I just remembered off the top of my head that I didn't even remember that we're mentioning is Brian Price, who was on the practice squad last year. And that's another guy that could be in the mix here. Not really a draft pick, but he was on the practice squad last year, came up and played in a couple games and showed okay. So there's another guy that you could potentially add to the mix. So that's a little bit of a lottery ticket there that the Packers could add to the mix here that I'm just remembering. But so forgive me for going off track there. But Jaron Jones is a guy that I kind of like there. Again, as a rotational type, you could probably get him in the fourth, fifth, sixth, this range, kind of depending on how. There's going to be a run on edge rushers and cornerbacks at some point. I think there'll be one in the first round and probably another one at some point in the second or third round that probably pushes some of these poor defensive linemen down the board. But Jaron Jones is a guy that I like in there at some point.
Yeah, I think my favorite guy in this kind of area, I like Nazir Jones. Never going to be difficult for me to stump for a University of North Carolina guy, but I really like Ryan Glasgow as a guy if you can get him late. I like he's got that frame that I'm looking for. He's taller than 6'3". Hopefully we'll be able to stay at the five technique. Might be a little bit in that Dean Lowry mold that we'll see where his, you know, they're going to talk about arm length and stuff. We'll see where his frame actually kind of checks in there, but it's cool. I mean, it's going to be exciting to see how Lowry progresses. Maybe getting another five tech body type in there though would be helpful for depth reasons. Glasgow, I think, is a guy that you could maybe get in the fourth or fifth round that you would feel pretty excited about his potential, and it never hurts, in my opinion, to get guys from the upper Midwest that have played in cold weather before. It's not a huge trait for me. It's not a huge deal. But if I feel about the same about a player, it could be a tiebreaker for me. I don't have a problem with that breaking ties. You know, just Michigan guys, Ohio State guys, guys that, you know, when you play where they play in November, it's just, it's cold. And it's going to be cold in Green Bay in November and December as well. So that's something that I would certainly look at would be Glasgow there. We're talking, you know, the next question that we've been asking is, who's your favorite player of the position? We're not going to have the discussion. It's Jonathan Allen. We love him, and we don't like anybody else. So that's not something we really needed to get into. Cody, who's the most undervalued defensive lineman in this class?
I might list a couple names just so we can touch on a couple more prospects, since we didn't really have much of a discussion for the best prospect. I think undervalued right now a little bit is Devon Godshall from LSU. 6'4", 209 pounds. Kind of, he played nose tackle and five tech for LSU this past year under Dave Aranda. So he's well coached. He understands the system and what his role is. He actually ended up having pretty decent sack numbers throughout his career, 6.5 1 year, 5.5 another year. I kind of like what he does as far as occupying blockers and knowing his role. But he also has, you know, some strength to him where he can get into the backfield from time to time. He's kind of going overlooked, but I think in day three, you know, he'd be a good value pick and someone who can develop into a pretty good player. To go kind of in a different direction, another guy who was invited to the Senior Bowl and definitely flashed a few times was Tanzel Smart from Tulane. He's a squatty guy at 6'1", 296 pounds, a little bit like Daniels in that, you know, he's probably more of a three tech, but again, for a team that plays so much nickel and two down linemen, that's not exactly a bad thing. He can definitely get in the backfield. He makes a lot of plays. I think last year he had 18.5 tackles for loss or some crazy number like that. He definitely makes plays in the backfield and puts their offensive lineman, stresses the interior of the offensive lineman as far as his ability to slash. And just a couple other guys I think are worth mentioning in case that the Packers explore, you know, drafting a defensive lineman earlier, is Jaleel Johnson from Iowa. He's a very good player, super strong, is a disruptor in the middle at 6'3", 310 pounds. Montrevious Adams is another name, kind of the same thing, 6'3", 310 pounds from Auburn. Both those guys, or Adams at the Senior Bowl, had some good plays too where, you know, he had came up with a little bit of buzz. There's some people who are higher on him than most, but Carlos Watkins from Clemson, I think, is a good name to know. 6'4", 312 pounds. He plays a really, really stout defensive line for Clemson. He and amongst all the other studs on that Clemson D-line, you know, were obviously one of the better defenses in the country. Just, again, if the Packers were to explore an option early, these are names that you should probably know. Caleb Brantley, more of a penetrator, super strong guy. You know, he gets in the backfield, disruptor. Penetrator, more in the mold of a Mike Daniels as opposed to a classic five tech like the Dean Lowry or something like that. But as far as later guys that again that I keep my eye on are Tanzel, similar to Daniels and Christian Ringo, and then Devon Godshall, who's more of the Dean Lowry five tech.
All right, so according to Cody, the most undervalued defensive lineman is all of them.
All of them.
Well, I mean, we got to explore a little bit of these names. As much as we hate on this class, there's a couple guys, you know, who, you know, given the right situation, right kind of, you know, coaching, they could end up being some players. But the most underrated right now, under-talked about, is Devon Godshall and Tanzel Smart. We'll go with those two. But, again, I wanted to mention a couple of the other guys.
Yeah, no, I jest. I will say I think that I think the two guys that I'm going to end up being higher on than most will be Eddie Vanderdoes from UCLA and the guy you just mentioned, Jaleel Johnson from Iowa. I really like both guys, specifically Johnson. I think if you could get Johnson with a defensive line coach that could get a little bit more consistency out of his game, you really have something there. I know, Jacob, that game that I gave you a hard time about when Michigan lost to Iowa on national TV there, that was probably the best Jaleel Johnson game of the season. He was extremely disruptive throughout there. So something definitely that film to watch if you want to not hate one of these defensive linemen would be Jahlil Johnson versus Michigan in that game. Jacob, the most underrated defensive line prospect in this class.
Yeah, it's hard to call any of them really underrated because it's hard to gauge where a lot of these guys are going because it's really, you know, like we've mentioned, Jonathan Allen and then everybody else. And you guys have all mentioned Jahlil Johnson. I was actually in the house for that game. I was at Kinnick. I made the trip to Iowa, and it was not a fun trip for that very reason. I watched Jahlil Johnson destroy Michigan's season. Without that game, Michigan might have been in the college football playoff. I don't know. But Jahlil Johnson destroyed Michigan's entire season that night. I believe he is the player that made the tackle that may or may not have broken Wilton Spade's collarbone. It may have separated his shoulder. That injury was never fully disclosed as to what that was. That was a really good game for him. That's a guy, like you mentioned, it's coaching. It's a guy that you need to get with the right defensive line coach. It's similar to what I think a lot of people say about last year's quarterback class of if you get them with the right quarterback coach, some of these defensive linemen can flourish. And then another guy is that if you get this guy with the right, I don't know if he's going to be a really good pass rusher, but as far as run defense goes, Chris Wormley has size. He's 6'5". He's about 300 pounds. He's a really good run defender already. He shows some flash in the pass rush department, but he doesn't really have any defined moves. But he's a good strong side defender as far as the run game goes. The only issue I have from a Packers standpoint is if they drafted him, he would be a 5-tech, and that's kind of repetitive as far as what they drafted Dean Lowry to be specifically. And I don't know if he has a specific burst to do that. But he's the guy that I'm probably going to be a little bit higher on than most, and not just because he wore the maize and blue uniform. But Jahlil Johnson's the guy. If you want to go specifically as far as undervalued, I watched him destroy my favorite college team season, so that alone is going to get some disdain and some love at the same time, which is weird. Montrevious Adams is a name you guys have mentioned. I don't need to spend a ton of time because you guys have mentioned that. So those three guys specifically jump out to me as far as guys that – I don't know if undervalued is the right word because it's hard to say where some guys are being valued simply because of how this class is being valued as a whole because it really is Jonathan Allen and then everybody else.
Russ, let me ask you, have you gotten into Dalvin Tomlinson at all? Would you be classified as undervalued if he's playing second fiddle to Jonathan Allen out of Alabama?
I wasn't incredibly impressed. Yes, I did dive into Dalvin Tomlinson. It's something, you know, you hit it right on the head. It's something that I wanted to see. Playing alongside Jonathan Allen, did he get overlooked? And the fact is he got single-teamed a lot and didn't do a whole heck of a lot with it. I don't think he's undervalued. I think he's fine as the, you know, eighth, ninth guy in this class and would honestly really, I think, kind of inform my opinion on the difference between the two classes because I think the difference between Kenny Clark and Dalvin Tomlinson as a prospect is a pretty wide chasm. So, last question is what is the likelihood we keep focusing on these six picks in the first five rounds? What's the likelihood Green Bay takes a defensive lineman with one of those six picks, Jacob?
Well, you know, like I've mentioned on every single show, Ted Thompson's taken an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman in almost every draft he's been a part of. But with those six picks in the first five rounds, that's where it gets a little fishy. So because of that, I say 50%. Now, the likelihood he takes a defensive lineman as a whole, I would say 90%. But in those first five or those first six picks, I say it's 50% just because of the needs at cornerback, outside linebacker, pass catcher, etc. And with the fact that we mentioned Forsythe, he took two defensive linemen last year. We'll know a little bit more when free agency comes to light with what they do there as far as needs coming into light, stuff like that. So I'll say 50% for what the first five rounds.
Yeah, I'm right there. I think 30 or 40%. That goes up to 70 or 80 for me. on getting drafted as a whole. I think they're high on Brian Price. I think they view Brian Price as a draftable player. I think you're exactly right when you say that his ascension from the practice squad to the 53 is, I don't know if I want to call it likely, but it's definitely something that's potentially in the cards here. So I'm down on the 30s and 40s. Cody?
Yeah, I'm there too, probably 30%. Value would have to present itself. Hopefully that some of the other needs were addressed, but, you know, it's not a pressing, dire issue, so the right situation have to happen. So I'll go low, 30%.
Well, there you have it, guys. We would like to thank all of you for listening once again. You can check my workout at Cheesehead TV. You can check my workout at PackersTalk.com. I publish on Monday afternoons and Friday mornings. You can check Jacob out at FanRig. You can check Cody out at CheeseheadTV.com, or at least as part of the Cheesehead TV draft guide. We want to thank you guys for listening one more time, and go Pack, go.